Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, and welcome into Assignment Football. It's week 16 in the NFL. Hope everyone had a great Christmas, a great holiday season. For those of you who don't celebrate Christmas, a wonderful Saturnalia, a fantastic Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, whatever it is you celebrate. I hope it was fantastic. We always here in Hawaii have a big going for Christmas. It's been a fantastic season out here in the islands of Hawaii. Mike, good morning. How was your Christmas, sir?
It was great. Still trying to clean up the present explosion that happened in my house, and you know how that goes. You've had young kids or have young kids.
Yeah, so I mean that's always going to be a thing for parents of young children. Lots of gift wrap and such. It's nice. It's nice. Here's the thing about having an older child, because my child is 18. We did not get up at 5 a.m., so that was nice. You are allowed to have a cup of coffee before you get into it, and it's actually a pretty nice experience. But it is nothing like the joy of watching your young children and the magic of Christmas and Santa Claus and all that great stuff. So I do miss that part a little bit, but I also don't miss having someone knocking down the door at 4:30 a.m. trying to get me up.
Yeah, I'm not kidding. It's awesome. I love it. It's one of my favorite days of the year.
Yep.
You know, it's just nice to be able to give the kids nice things. It's a joy for me personally. So, plus I got a fish.
Absolutely.
So I'm big time now.
Oh, okay. I see. You're back. You're in shape. You're ready to go. Mike's an avid runner. Just so you guys know, Mike's a really avid runner. Runs pretty much daily. So getting a Fitbit for Mike, that's like top of the list stuff right there.
I didn't even have to ask for it. It was just Santa delivered.
Awesome. I got a new microphone set up here for the show, which is nice, with a pop filter, a nice pro mic with a boom. So everything's going great on my end, too. Must have been a really good radio host this year. Santa Claus hooked me up. So that's good. All right, so here we are. Anyway, we're in week 17 of the NFL. Week 16, I'm sorry. I don't want to end it. Well, maybe I do want to end it a little early. Who cares? I don't know. But here we are, week 16. We're getting ready for... Obviously, this is a big week for fantasy football and stuff like that, so we'll get into that. But before we go too much further, I just want to remind you that if you're looking for professional financial advice regarding retirement planning, investments, and life insurance, you should contact our good friend, Matt Govendo, and receive a complimentary planning analysis. And you can call Matt today, area code 315-671-1864, and he'll hook you up with your financial future. And if you'd like to join our conversation here on the show, the number to call is 347-637-2812, and we'll get you on the air as quickly as we possibly can. A lot of stuff, like I said, going on this week. If you're in your fantasy football championships, congratulations. I know I lost in the semis last week, so a little disappointing there. But all in all, it was a good year. I can't really complain. I know Mike's got a championship game that he's in today, Mike. Who are you starting?
Well... You know, as I was talking to you off the air, running back's a little thin because I've had literally all the great running backs that have gotten injured have been on my roster. So, but I'm still Matt Forte and Todd Gurley. You think that's a great, you know, starting running back duo, but I don't like Gurley at Seattle.
No.
My team's back. It was an auction draft, and, we were all pretty new to it. And I did a couple mock auction drafts which pushed me sort of ahead of everybody else's curve. So I sort of abused the auction format, and my team's ridiculous. 4K's early after four significant running back injuries are still starting for me. I have Allen Robinson and Julio Jones starting for receiver with Demaryius Thomas as the flex. Greg Olsen at tight end. The Chiefs defense, really, really, really good team. So,
all in all, it looks like a good matchup for you today.
I've been in first place all year in that league, and I'm against the sixth seed in the Super Bowl. You know, you never know, I guess. What's going to happen in fantasy. That's why they play the game, so to speak. But, on paper, I should win.
Yeah, any given Sunday and all that. So that's what it's all about.
But,
so lots.
the exact opposite. I had the worst team in the league all year by far. Scored the least total points, so I'm no fantasy savant. I just got lucky in that league, I guess.
Now you play enough leagues, you're gonna catch one. Like in my one league out here, like it's Honda City League, I'm middle of the pack, and that's kind of my story. And I was 10th in one league out of 10 teams. A lot of middle of the pack finishes. And then in this league that I lost in the semis last week, that's the one out here. It's called Straight Out of Hawaii, run by my good friend Duke Ferreira, and all, of course a lot of guys that I know out here. But so what we did, I started off, I thought I had a really good draft, and I started out 0-5. And I was, you know, I was that team that was just like had the most points scored against it for whatever reason. You know, just every week, you know, the team I was playing blew up. So I lost the first 5 weeks, but then I ended up finishing 8 out of the last 10. So not too bad. Ended up with a winning record and made it to the semifinals after starting 0-5. So I felt pretty good about it. Hey, that's it. So good luck to you if you're in your fantasy football Super Bowl this week. I wish I was, but I'm not. So here we go. NFL news and notes. Just kind of get a few quick things. There was a couple games already this week. This is our first show where we've had two games to talk about. San Diego and Oakland. I don't know. There's kind of like a sad thing going on there. You've got Oakland and San Diego, two teams that are looking like they're probably moving. Well, they're two of the three teams that could possibly be moving. Oakland and San Diego, division rivals, could both possibly be moving to Los Angeles. Oakland ends up winning the game. You know, a really great effort from Derek Carr. And I feel like Oakland has so much promise, Mike. You know what I mean? I mean, there's so much.
You were like the sad thing about that game, you know, it stinks about the San Diego team kind of pulling up its logos and probably being the last team in San Diego. But to me, it's that Oakland doesn't get to play for the playoffs these last couple weeks because they were sort of good enough to be there. And
yeah,
thinks they didn't win another game or two earlier in the season where these last few games are relevant for this young team. I would have liked to see this game have playoff implications for Oakland at least. So it's kind of sad they're ending their sort of hoping to get to 500, you know, as opposed to hoping to get to the playoffs.
Right. You know, and you kind of get, if they would have got, you go back early in the season, if they would have got that win at Chicago that they really could have gotten, and I mean, that's not the, there's a couple games here and there that they could have won, and I think they learned a lot this year. I think Oakland's going to be a team you might want to look out for next year. I mean, maybe I say Oakland, the Raiders are going to be a team that you might want to look out for next year, especially you don't know what's going on in Denver. That division could be really wide open next year. You know, it's kind of up in the air. So Oakland's got a really bright future. San Diego, I don't know about San Diego and how much of a future they have, but you never know. One good draft, a decent free agent class, and they'll be right back in it too. The other game, Washington at Philadelphia. Washington went into that game in Philly last night with a chance to clinch the division. Win the NFC East by default outright, and they did. They got it done. Kirk Cousins was really, really good. 4 touchdown passes, no interceptions, no turnovers from the quarterback position. He played a really great game, except for a one sequence at the end of the first half, which was kind of mystifying, confusing. I don't know what they were doing, that kind of thing. But we'll get into that a little bit more later. But Philadelphia has been officially eliminated from playoff contention, as have the New York Giants. And the Dallas Cowboys were out last week when they lost their game against the Jets on a Saturday. Well, they were eliminated the following day when the other teams won. But so that's it. The NFC East has been decided. And your Washington Redskins.
The other teams in the league, Tom. Thank God that we don't have to see any more of the Giants, the Eagles, or the Cowboys this year. And hopefully the Washington Redskins get a quick exit in the playoffs so we can be done with this division.
Yeah. Well, and you know, the division itself, and there's it's not good. You know, it just isn't good. It's a division that's full of poor play. It's not the only one. The AFC South also is a division that just does not have very good teams in it. But the thing is, it's kind of an epidemic throughout football, and we're going to get into that a little bit later today. We're going to talk about the state of play in the NFL and how poor it actually is in 2015. Yeah, go ahead.
We talked about the Raiders game. One reason I have some sympathy for the Raiders is Raiders fans are awesome. There's people that I've known my whole life that have always been Raiders fans. They're diehards, and the Raiders have been bad almost my entire life. They haven't made the playoffs since 2002, and still their fans chug along. And, you know, we live 3,500 miles or whatever from Oakland, and, yeah, still there's these diehard Raider fans in my area. And I remember growing up, kids with the Oakland Raiders starters jackets was like the cool trend back in the late 80s, early 90s. And a lot of those kids that had those Oakland Raiders starter jackets are still Oakland Raiders fans today. So I have some sympathy as somebody who grew up in that era, because they're a team with a great fan base, and they sort of deserve better than they've had.
That's true. No, that's, and maybe more so than any other team like that. Like, there's a few teams that have national fan bases, and Oakland is one of them.
Yeah,
Oakland,
like Buffalo,
Pittsburgh, Dallas.
You know, and they've had the same sort of difficulties throughout the years of this great fan base and no success on the field. But to me, you know, I'm in Syracuse, so there should be a bunch of Buffalo fans here, regardless of the quality of the team, that's the nature of the league. But the Oakland fans are sort of a step above.
Yeah, no, that's it. Buffalo's fan base is basically concentrated around Lake Erie and Lake Ontario. And then once you get away from there, there's just not that very many, not very many Buffalo Bills fans. And really the same can be said about the Giants. There's just not a lot of and that's a team that's extremely successful, has won 4 Super Bowls, and there just isn't, you know, there isn't a lot of New York Giants fans once you get out of the Northeast. But a team like Oakland, they've got fans everywhere. Miami's the same way. They've got fans everywhere. Now, there you go. But so I think it's a bright future, like we said, for the Raiders. It is a shame that they did not make the playoffs this year or aren't even playing for the playoffs next week. But I think they have a very bright future. They've got a lot of young offensive stars and defensive stars. They might have a player who's becoming one of the best. Well, he is one of the best defensive players in the league. Khalil Mack is an absolute machine. He's just really, really good. He's just really, really good. So, good news, bad news.
Players. They got Amari Cooper, Michael Crabtree, Latavius Murray, all quality guys on the offensive end, and Carr looks like he's got a bright future. So I really like them going forward. We talked about this previously on the show. Like, they can target needs in the draft. They can get the best player, and it's not – They can work a little better in the draft because they don't need every single position on the football field like they have in the past. And like some of the really bad teams where it's just like, well, we need everything. What can we even do in the draft? We can't really make ourselves better enough. Where the Raiders can fill a couple holes with the draft and be really good next year. So,
right. And they can even look at, you know, free agents. Who can I get? And it's an affordable free agent that's going to help my depth, who's going to help, you know, that's kind of where they're at right now. It's like, if you look at Tennessee likely is going to have the number one pick in the draft this year. They had the number two pick in the draft last year, and they've got so many needs.
Right.
That you don't know where to start.
You don't want to waste the high picks on receivers and running backs. They literally don't have a receiver or a running back on their roster. Delaney Walker is probably the best offensive player they have. Their quarterback,
outside of Marcus Mariota. Yep.
Right, the jury's out on Mariota going forward. You know, he looked all right this year, but you don't know if he's your franchise guy going forward. So,
sure.
You know, what do you do? I mean, to me, we've talked about in the past a lot, you draft linemen on both sides of the ball, but that's where they're at, is they just need to shore up every position on the football field.
Absolutely. And I think they'll start, you know, we'll get into some draft stuff in a couple of weeks. We'll start looking at, you know, I'm going to make Mike do some mock drafts. He's going to love that. But he's going to have to start looking at some prospects coming out. I think Tennessee ends up taking a tackle. I think you've got to start working on that offensive line. Marcus Mariota was running for his life this year. But, you know, there's that. Awesome. Other big story coming out, and we're not going to get – oh, go ahead.
Before the show, we talked about two of the aging quarterbacks in the league, both with interesting kind of stories going on this morning. And just to
that's where I was going.
Yeah, we talked about Peyton Manning. And so they've linked him to a report of one of the HGH labs back in 2011. And you and I briefly touched on this, you know, off the air. And every person that's ever been linked to steroids did that. Like, we haven't encountered somebody where it's like, they got linked to Balco, or they got linked to one of these big steroid guys, and then it turns out they're innocent. So if Peyton Manning is, and at least he came out immediately and denied the news and everything, if he is innocent, he would be the first one. So it wouldn't surprise me at all if a guy that's been great for 15 years and saw the effects of aging start to take their toll on him didn't start looking at HGH, and especially because Manning had the 1 year where he was hurt all season, and when they followed up by drafting Andrew Luck, and that's right around that time. So
it's basically insinuating that he used the HGH to recover from neck surgery to get back to the league. And that, you know, so there you go. And it, yeah.
And if that would surprise you, you're naive, basically.
Yeah.
Because it wouldn't surprise me one bit. And then the other story, we're talking Drew Brees, and, you know, the Saints, they're bad this year. Their defense is historically bad, and they have no chance to go anywhere. You've got Drew Brees making $25 million, and he's out there with a torn plantar fascia, which, having heard a bunch of people talk about it this week on the radio, because Manning's got the same injury right now, it's like stepping on rocks with bare feet was the way I'd heard it described repeatedly. And the fact that as a quarterback, you just can't get your feet under you to propel the ball. And so your base is off. So you don't have the accuracy or the arm strength because of you can't really get your feet and your legs under you because you just can't feel like you're on solid ground. And here you got a guy making $25 million a year with no upside to playing. They can't go to the playoffs. Their record is irrelevant at this point, and you're running Drew Brees out there. We're both kind of going, why? Why do you do that?
I think it's Drew Brees' decision to do it. I think he sees, you know, the writing on the wall. I think he believes this is his last game in New Orleans as a member of the New Orleans Saints. I believe he will be back playing football next year. I just don't believe it's going to be in New Orleans. Just because of what you said, he's making so much money, and they are so bad, and they need so much improvement that I think they're looking at a situation where they're going to be starting over. And I think that they could use that money from Drew Brees' contract in a lot better ways than on a 37-year-old quarterback, which is what he's going to be next year. And he'll be good. And for whoever he plays for, he'll be good. But will he be good enough to make the New Orleans Saints a playoff contender in a division that has the Carolina Panthers in it?
And he costs the most of any player in the league next year against the cap. He's a $30 million cap hit, the way his contract is structured.
Yeah,
that's a lot of money.
Because they've pushed the money down the line trying to make the team better, and they've been in salary cap kind of purgatory for a while now. They've been pushing this money ahead, and now the payday's here, and they've got to make a decision. So that's where it would be for him. He's like I said, he's probably moving on. I know that.
Go ahead.
Oh no, I said he's probably moving on. He's probably going to be, you know, playing in another city next year, and it's a sad kind of end to a great chapter, the greatest chapter in New Orleans Saints history. If you're a fan of the Saints, you know that this team has done things with Drew Brees and Sean Payton that it has never even dreamed of doing otherwise.
Yeah, they're the worst team historically in the NFL. I mean, other than the Super Bowl in 2009. They have been a bottom feeder essentially their entire existence.
Yes. They are, I mean, I know them and Tampa Bay, I guess, are the two really the worst franchises as far as win-loss records go. I haven't looked into it. I just know that those are probably the two teams that have the worst win-loss records of all time.
Cleveland's got to be close if you don't look at, like, Otto Graham era.
It depends, yeah. It depends on how you look at it. Are you looking at it as one franchise going all the way back to the 40s and 50s, or do you look at it as this franchise that started in 1999? Because if you look at the 1999 to present franchise, that's horrendous. It is awful. There's nothing good about it. There's never been anything good about it. I mean, they've made the playoffs a couple times, but other than that, they've just been a complete – it's just been a march of mediocrity and even less than mediocrity for about 16 years. And it's
I think Derek
Anderson
had the best quarterback season in that time frame, 99 forward. And Derek Anderson, I mean, has been atrocious everywhere he's gone.
He wasn't that good in Cleveland either.
They weren't going to just for 1 year. It was like it was hope for Browns fans everywhere.
Yeah. And I have friends who are Browns fans, believe it or not. I have a couple of them, and it's just, you know, my wife's father, Crystal's father, was a Browns fan. It's just sad. It's just really, really sad. And there's Browns fans in Cleveland, in Syracuse, where you're from, because of, obviously, Jim Brown, Ernie Davis, all that stuff from way back when. They're all older. There's no young Browns fans in Syracuse anymore, I don't think. But It's just a sad thing. So anyway, moving on from that. Speaking of old and broken down, the Patriots signed a running back this week to replace LeGarrette Blount, who's now on injured reserve. Steven Jackson is active today. He will make his Patriots debut against the Jets. How do you feel
you
about
know,
Mike?
He's probably not hurt right now. Steven Jackson. He's probably really
yes.
healthy.
I'm sure he's fresh.
The nice thing about the Patriots is they run a zone blocking scheme. One of the nice things about the Patriots is they run a zone blocking scheme, which essentially allows the running back to just go forward through the hole the offensive line creates, and that will get him 3 or 4 yards. And that's why LeGarrette Blount is so successful in New England, because he doesn't mess around in the backfield. He just runs to the hole that the play is designed to run to, and he goes forward. And the Patriots don't want anything else other than that out of their running back. Look, when they run on first down, they want to be in 2nd and 7, 2nd and 6. They just want to keep moving the ball forward, keep the defense honest, and Steven Jackson can probably do that very well for them, actually. I think he'll be fine. I don't know what he's got left with all the years on his body, but I think he can handle what they want out of him and probably be very effective doing it. And then that allows them to use James White in the scat back, you know, Darren Sproles type of role that they like to have on their second running back and not try to run with him. I think they'll be fine. They always find a way. So.
Yeah, I think the other thing that makes it easy to run as a running back in New England, the scheme is good, but also it's the absolute fear in the defense that if they show a heavy box that's trying to stop a run, that Tom Brady's just going to shred them over the top.
Yeah, you cannot you have to defend the pass first.
Right. The thing of it is Tom Brady is so good at recognizing a defense that you have to basically play straight up. I've got to play both at the same time. I've got to have five guys ready to drop back in the secondary, and I've got to have 7 guys ready to run. That's 12 guys, and I only have 11. So there you go. That's what it's about. And I think that's what makes it very easy for running backs. And I don't know if they're very easy, but it makes it easy for New England to find a running back, because it just isn't as hard as if you're like a team that's starting Zach Mettenberger today, you know, or if you're a team that's starting Ryan Mallett today or Kellen Moore. These are the people who start.
How many teams are a quarterback away from being a reasonable team in the NFL?
You just look at it this way. Dallas, I mean, yeah, they lost DeMarco Murray in the offseason, but basically they're the same team they were last year. Except for Tony Romo.
They absolutely make the playoffs with Tony Romo this year.
Right. They're probably something like 10-6, maybe even 11-5. But instead now, they're 4-10 with 2 games to play at Buffalo, a loss. I'm just saying, I don't think, well, we'll get to it later, but I don't know how they win. They have no Dez Bryant. They have no Tony Romo. They have no DeMarco Murray. All 3 of their guys from last year are gone. And then their last week, they get to host the division champion Washington Redskins. So I don't know how they win any more games, but I don't know that they want to win any more games. I don't know that I want them to win any more games.
Well, what good does it do? I think you talked about this earlier in the season where you're like, they're going to win just enough games to screw themselves out of a good draft pick. And, you know, if they win these next 2, that's exactly what they're going to do.
Right, and then they end up 6-10, and then now they're picking 12th. Instead of being 4-12, picking 4th. You know, I mean, that's how bad – we're going to get into that, too. That's how bad the NFL is this year. The difference between – I mean, if you're 6-10, you might legitimately have the 18th pick.
Oh.
I'm telling you, it's that bad. You might be late teens. There's so many teams that are 5 – or fewer wins in the NFL right now. It's not. It's just ridiculous. It's ridiculous. But we're going to get into that a little bit more. I don't think we're going to do any like real breaks today, Mike, because I don't think I have the ability to really do breaks.
Oh, okay. All right. I was kind of waiting.
I can give you. I'll give you 10 seconds. Here, hold on. I'm going to give you 10 seconds of this.
Fan Up Network. Track your fantasy team, get player updates, and expert advice all in one place. Gain the edge. FanUpNetwork.com.
How was that? Did you like it?
Sweet. I'm down with FanUpNetwork.com.
That's all we got. That's all we have. It's like they leave me with one commercial. and I got a 10-second. It's not like they leave me with like the 46 seconds of Alan Sodrzinski talking about the college, the Thursday night college football blitz, which is awesome, by the way. And if you're not listening to it, you're a fool. You're a fool.
So
Alan's going to be on with us today.
So we have folks probably in their fantasy football championship game this week. If you're not in your championship game this week and you have to do fantasy football next week, I feel bad for you because week 17 is an awful week to be involved in fantasy football, trying to piece together a lineup out of reserve, wondering who's going to play past the first quarter and things of that nature is no fun. So hopefully this is the week, and if it's not, you need to talk to your commissioner. So next year it is the week in which your fantasy season ends. And it's difficult because if you're still playing, I don't know how I talk to you about how to improve your lineup, because you obviously got here because either your lineup's good or you're lucky. And I would hope at this point you don't have a lot of deep. But there are some interesting guys available on waivers. In the quarterback position, you've got Teddy Bridgewater playing at home against the New York Giants. The New York Giants suddenly have nothing to play for. You know? They have nothing to play for.
And they're awful anyway.
Historically bad pass defense. And Bridgewater's serviceable, but they could make him a superstar today, and he's available in 77% of leagues. So if I had a question at quarterback and I just wanted to try somebody with some upside, I would give Bridgewater a shot. Similar sort of light version of that is Ryan Tannehill. He gets Indianapolis at home. Indianapolis is
also bad.
Defense is also atrocious. And I think Tannehill has some high upside, and he's available in 42% of leagues. So if we had the show a few days ago, I would have just told you to play Kirk Cousins, but it's too late for that now.
Yeah, and it would have been a great play. I'll tell you what, another thing about that Giants-Minnesota matchup, if you're looking for a fantasy wide receiver, I think Stephon Diggs is going to go crazy today, just absolutely crazy. I think he could have 150 yards and touchdowns.
So I actually have Diggs written down on my notes here, and one of the notes I have alongside Stephon Diggs is he's capable of a big game, and the reason that's important right now is if you don't care about guys' floors right now, you need to blow up this week and win, you know? You need to roll with guys with high upside because there's no going forward from today. So a guy like Stephon Diggs is capable of a huge game. And to me, that's what I want. I don't want the guy that I know I'm going to get 6 or 8 points out of him, and that's probably all I'm going to get, like a Tennessee running back, for example. But going to the guy like Diggs could score 30 points today. He could get 150 yards and 3 touchdowns. Like, it's in the cards. You're bad enough defense, explosive offensive player. Now, look, his floor is he catches one ball for 8 yards, and he's done that.
Yep, that could happen.
He's a bad, bad, bad game. But if you wanted, to me, take a shot on guys with upside, specifically, like, if you're the underdog in your matchup. I'm the 1 seed against the 6 seed in my Super Bowl. I'm dancing with the guys who brought me there because my team's been the best team all year, so why mess around? If I'm the 6 seed in that same matchup, I'm not dancing with the guys that brought me there. The guys that brought me there were 7-6 in the regular season or whatever it was. And I want these high upside guys. Look, Diggs is a great example.
Absolutely. So let me ask you this question. We talk about fantasy, and remember, it's not just about fantasy football. There's all kinds. If you're a fantasy guy, you might be playing fantasy hockey, fantasy basketball, fantasy baseball. And go to fanupnetwork.com and download the FanUp Network app for your phone, whether it be iPhone or Windows or what's that other thing? Oh, the thing I use, a Google Android device. Mike, are you on board with Google Android now? Is that what I heard?
No, I went to the iPhone 6.
Oh, good Lord. All right, anyway, so he was going to make the move, and he didn't. What a chump. But anyway, so go to fanupnetwork.com. Get the app. You can keep all your fantasy teams in one place. You get live updates. You get player news, exclusive content. Fanupnetwork.com. They're a big but so talking about fantasy football and talking about this season and how it's gone. Let me ask you this question. So it's 2016. It's August 2016. You're sitting down. You're ready to draft. You get the number one pick. Who is your number one draft pick for next year's fantasy football draft?
I think if you don't take one of the two Pittsburgh Steelers, you're probably doing yourself a disservice. I would always tend towards a running back personally, just because if you look at it late, then they're the guys that you wish you had enough. You always wish you had another running back. So I would take Le'Veon Bell first, assuming a lot doesn't change between now and then. That would be my first pick.
All right. So no, Dad, do you give any consideration to Todd Gurley? Because that's who I thought you would say. Todd Gurley, to me, Todd Gurley is like the next coming of Adrian Peterson. It just looks that way to me.
Here's the deal. Todd Gurley is really good. Pittsburgh's offense is really good. Pittsburgh's offense puts up 400-plus yards every week. There is opportunity on that offense for multiple guys to be successful. And St. Louis's offense gets held under 10 points from time to time. St. Louis's offense has scored 241 points this year in 14 games. So that's like 16, 17 points a game.
That's worse than the Cowboys.
Without a quarterback. Pittsburgh's
right.
offense has scored 378 points this year, and that's almost without Le'Veon Bell all season and missing other pieces throughout the season, including Roethlisberger, including both the second and third wide receivers. And they still, because of scheme and talent and just general ability, have put together a 378-point season. Imagine with all those guys help. They're the best offensive
line.
So I would rather always have a fantasy player from an offense that's good than an offense that's bad. And so that's why I wouldn't pick Gurley first.
And I'll tell you this. I had Le'Veon Bell this year. He was my first-round pick in one of my leagues. I got him like sixth or seventh because people were afraid of the two-game suspension, apparently. And I handcuffed him with D'Angelo Williams. So I had good production out of my running back spot all year because Le'Veon Bell, when he came back, he was fantastic. D'Angelo Williams, when he's been asked to play, he's been very, very good. There's really almost no letdown from Bell to Williams this year as far as fantasy value went. And that's, you know, one of the reasons why I made the playoffs in that league that I started out 0-5 is because I had D'Angelo Williams. But like you're saying, D'Angelo Williams on a lesser team is not as a good play. Is not as good a player in fantasy.
The D'Angelo Williams success is indicative of why Le'Veon Bell is such a good pick, because Pittsburgh makes you a good running back because their offense is so efficient. Roethlisberger Roethlisberger might be the most underrated quarterback in my entire lifetime. When you talk about quarterbacks, you never talk about Roethlisberger. And Roethlisberger's stats are as good as all the other guys. He's got Super Bowl rings. Like, I don't get how he isn't mentioned alongside Drew Brees being a great example. New Orleans sucks every year. Drew Brees won the one Super Bowl. They had like two or three years where they were a really, really good team. And Drew Brees is consistently mentioned. When you're talking top three, four, five quarterbacks, his name's always in it. And Roethlisberger's never is. Pittsburgh's always elite. Like, I do not get it.
Right. No. With all the injuries they've had this year in Pittsburgh, they really don't have any reason why they should be making the playoffs. And they're going to make the playoffs.
As a New England fan, I want no part of Pittsburgh. I'd rather they play literally any other team in the AFC in the playoffs than Pittsburgh. Any other team.
Right.
And Kansas City.
Because they're the one team. Right. They're the one team that can they can blow up for 45 at any given moment.
And
how do you cover? You don't cover all the wide receivers. You can't cover Antonio Brown and Marcus Wheaton and Martavis Bryant. You just can't do it. I mean, and Ben Roethlisberger is the one quarterback left in this league who's willing to throw it 40 yards down the field on a regular basis. Like, that's what he wants to do. Everybody else is just check down Charlie, and they want to throw it 10 to 15 yards and let the receiver run for another 10 or 15 yards. He literally wants to put the ball in the air, down the field, and attack you, and that scares defenses, and it should. Because he's got the guys who outrun you.
Successful because you have to defend – you can't defend 12 yards of the field against Pittsburgh. You have to defend 30 yards, 40 yards of the field against Pittsburgh. And so your running back's going to get a 5-yard gain if you hand him the ball because the secondary's 25 yards back. So he doesn't have to beat 11 guys.
Right.
So I'm, you know, as much as I'm a huge New England fan, I've always been very complimentary of Pittsburgh and very respectful of Pittsburgh. And I think Ben's totally underrated. And first pitch, if I didn't take Bell, I wouldn't take another running back. I'd take Antonio Brown. So
Antonio Brown's really, really good. I don't know that he's the best. I mean, he might be the best fantasy wide receiver for sure. Like, everyone coming into this year is like, oh, he's the best receiver in the league. And I don't think he's the best. I think he's certainly one of the best receivers. I don't think he's the best receiver in the league, but he might easily be the best fantasy wide receiver. And partly, again, it's because of the offense that they run and the fact that he's going to get a 70-yard touchdown once every 3 or 4 weeks.
So I've always felt the same. I feel like receivers are, in general, overvalued in the NFL, and great quarterbacks make mediocre receivers look really good. Antonio Brown's a really good receiver with a really good quarterback, which makes him exceptional. And it's a lot – the guy he reminds me most of in my football viewing life is Marvin Harrison. And that's not a bad guy to be related to. He runs great routes. He's deceptively fast. He gets behind the defense, but he catches everything you throw at him. High usage, great quarterback that makes him a little better. He sort of has a lot of parallels to the Manning Harrison years.
A little undersized. Yeah, I see a lot of it. Yeah, he's an excellent route runner. He's just really, really good. Antonio Brown's just got so many things going for him.
So, anyway, I mean, there's a lot of time between now and next year's fantasy draft. And a lot of things could change between now and then. You know, Le'Veon Bell and LeGarrette Blount could be caught in the car smoking blunts again. But
yeah, that's possible. So there you go. You never know. Things happen. So there's that. So, again, good luck in your fantasy football Super Bowl if you're lucky enough to be playing in that today. If you got money on the line, that's even better, you know. But I am not, so that sucks.
So
but hey,
one of the things I was mentioning as far as the fantasy goes is, you know, it's a one-week shot now, so you need high upside. If I could tell you as a fantasy owner to pick up one person, it would be the Steelers defense this week gets Baltimore. And the Steelers defense is available in 38% of leagues. So they're owned, but they may not be owned in your league. And they're an upgrade over your defense right now for 1 week. At the Ravens is ridiculous. The Ravens have no offensive players now. Pittsburgh will certainly score a touchdown on defense today. And so if I could tell you to pick up one guy that will score you more points than the person you currently have on your roster, it would be Pittsburgh's defense.
Yeah. And the thing is, because here's the thing. In Baltimore, they're going to start today Ryan Mallett. So they woke Ryan Mallett up off his couch and said, hey, man, set your alarm clock. We're going to need you on Sunday. They signed him a couple weeks ago. There's no way he knows the offense. I don't know that he ever knew the offense in New England or Houston. And he's going to go out there and he's going to play. And he's going to play with a team that has no running back, no really serviceable receiver, a pretty suspect offensive line, a defense that can't stop anybody. It's going to be really, really, really bad. Really bad. So if you take a look, get on your waiver wire right now. If Pittsburgh Steelers defense is available, grab them, start them. They could win you your fantasy league.
If you could pick up one guy that might win you your league today, it would be Pittsburgh's defense. Before I talk about having the high upside choices, there's a couple of those that are fairly readily available, too. Tavon Austin's one, but they played Seattle at Seattle.
Ugh.
I'm not in love. I like Tavon Austin a lot, and I like his ability to break big plays, but I don't want at Seattle in my lineup today. I don't even really want Todd Gurley in my line today. I'm kind of stuck because, like I said about dancing with the guys who brung me. But I would prefer to have another option there. But a guy that is of that ilk with the high upside is Ted Ginn Jr. Ted Ginn Jr. has about three chances to score a touchdown every week on a long pass. Now, he drops 2 to 3 of those.
Right.
Because he's an awful receiver. That being said, every so often, he catches 2 out of 3 of those, and then all of a sudden has, you know, 2 catches for 120 yards and 2 touchdowns. So if you're looking at a guy that I need the upside, Ted Ginn has ridiculous upside. Whether he achieves that upside is another question, but if you're looking for a guy that could potentially blow the ceiling off, he can.
And if you're in a league where if you have a player and he scores a special teams touchdown, you get it, then Ted Ginn is magnificent.
He does all the time back.
Yeah, but not a lot of us are in those leagues.
They get Atlanta today. I don't know what happened to Atlanta. I thought the 5-0 start was a little, you know, overachieving for them, but I didn't think it was this much overachieving. And I feel like Atlanta as a team has just had their will broken. They're bad.
Yeah. So their defense was a lot of smoke and mirrors, to be honest with you, early in the year, and they got lucky a little bit. I mean, remember, early in the year they played the NFC East. Okay, in the weeks 1 through 5 or 1 through 6, they played all 4 NFC East teams. So they played Philadelphia, New York, Dallas without Romo. They were the second team to play Dallas without Romo. So they had Whedon. And then later on, a couple weeks later, or the week after that, they played Washington. So in their first 5 games, when they started out 5-0, 4 of those games were against the NFC East. Just put that in your thought cap there. So that kind of tells you they were not as good. They were playing really poor competition.
Yeah, looking at their schedule throughout the year, it has been. You're right. And the other game they won was against the Texans, then at the Titans, and then they lost 6 in a row before finally winning at the Jaguars. So they cobbled together 7-7.
Right, and 7 wins against 7 pretty mediocre teams. You think of their 7 wins are against the NFC East and the AFC South, literally the 2 worst divisions in football.
Wow, that's awful.
Yeah,
no kidding. Okay. That is,
yeah. So they are.
So that should go well.
Yeah, they're not winning this game. But we'll get to that in a little bit. Let's not. I'm like giving away all my picks.
Unfortunately, 2 of the guys who brought me to the Super Bowl are Julio Jones and Todd Gurley, and I don't want to start either of them, honestly.
You can't. I don't know how you start Julio Jones today. I don't know how you can possibly do it, because he's playing against Pop. To me, like, I don't think he's going to win it, but I think he should. I think Josh Norman is the defensive player of the year. I think he's the best defensive player in football this year.
Like, okay, but for what he, Odell yeah. Beckham had 6 catches for 76 and a touchdown, I think, off the top of my head, and dropped a 52-yard touchdown pass.
Yeah.
Odell Beckham, without a drop, has almost 130 yards and 2 touchdowns. I don't know. And that's in a game
where
Odell Beckham had games. So,
okay, but when did he have success? He had success in the second half when they started moving him into the slot so he would get away from Josh Norman. That's what happened. The touchdown came against Josh Norman, okay? And he was complaining that it was offensive pass interference and all this other stuff. And he should have got a taunting penalty after the catch because he was stepping over Norman and made a big deal out of it. But anyway, so the touchdown came against Norman, but a lot of the 6 catches did not. They came in the slot. They came away from Josh Norman. So he got the 1 big play against Norman, but he did. Norman really shut him down all day. And that's why he tried to break Norman's jaw and only got a 1-game suspension for it and did not get ejected.
Which was crazy. And fun times. I actually watched that whole game, and it was almost every play. He should have been thrown out so long before that happened.
Yeah. But he was out of control. He was not this, and it kind of that actually speaks as much to the state of officiating in the NFL as anything else. That the fact that Odell Beckham Jr. did not get thrown out of that game, was not ejected from that game, is a very damning statement against the NFL's officiating. Because if ever a player deserved to be ejected, is that player coming from 10 yards down the field, full speed, ramming his helmet into the side of another player's helmet on purpose, trying to hurt that player. There's no other.
He easily could have broke Josh Norman's jaw. Easily.
Could have broke his neck, to be honest.
So,
but yes, you're absolutely right.
A piece of relevant information in regards to that is they can't eject him because of what they saw on the replay tape. So unless they ejected him on the spot, and I don't know why that would be, but you know how there's always rules and minutia that are
questionable. Yeah, no, I get that. That's fine. But I was watching it at full.
It is something that is the official. You're looking at the pile. You're looking at the ball. You're not necessarily paying attention to Odell Beckham running at the pile on a running play. I mean, I could see not seeing it as from a ref's point of view. I just think it's kind of odd that they – when they see something like that on replay, and again, this is something I heard on sports radio this week, so I'm assuming somebody else's research and the NFL rulebook is correct, but is that they can't look at what they saw on the replay and go, oh, my God, we should have ejected that guy.